It seems like everyone is either starting a side hustle or becoming their own boss. And you know what they're hearing a lot? It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/sell23, all lowercase. Whether you're selling loafers or peace lilies, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person. Covering all sales channels, from a shop front POS system to its all-in-one e-commerce platform, Shopify even gets you selling across social media marketplaces. With their 24/7 help and extensive business calls library, Shopify is ready to support your success every step of the way. Go to shopify.co.uk/sell23 to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.co.uk/sell23.
Hey, everybody. JJ Cooper, Matt Eddy, another of these Baseball America MLB prospect deep dives. We're talking about the Mets today. We're talking about a team that's made a big splash on the big league free agency market, but they're also working, and they've been working for several years, to try to improve the farm system. When Steve Cohen bought the Mets, he talked about the desire to essentially follow the Dodgers approach, which is, so what are you good at? The answer is, we're going to try to be good at everything. And a lot of teams, when they say that, they end up being not very good at that many things because you kind of have a limited resources and you got to decide where you're going to spend those. The Mets, if this goes the way they want, that resources are not a problem. The Soto signing obviously is a sign of this. This is a team that wants to compete with anybody and everybody for the top talent on the free agent market. But Matt, as we kind of dive into this, good to see you. The farm system wise, how is that coming along? How well are they doing at building the farm system to be one that is also top tier in addition to competing at the top tier free agency?
Yeah, I think they've really expanded the depth of the farm system more than anything. I think when you look at their top prospects, you wouldn't necessarily call anybody a blue chipper, but you get, you know, pretty good depth throughout the top 20, which compared with recent seasons is a step in the right direction. And I think, you know, they've invested a lot in improving the processes at the minor league level as well. And I think that's starting to bear some fruit with some recent call-ups. You know, Deadneil Nunez came out of nowhere last year in the bullpen and was a contributor. He's a good example of pitching development.
And this is a team that has produced recently. Francisco Alvarez is the catcher of now and the future. Mark Vientos kind of stepped in last year. Brett Beatty was thought to be kind of the third baseman. The young third baseman is going to take that job. That hasn't worked out yet, but Mark Vientos kind of stepped in and had a very solid season. You know, this is still, though, a pretty veteran-laden team. And it's also a team, like we said, that's going to be spending in free agency. We brought in Soto. How are they kind of, is these prospects, how much of it is aiming to produce, to fill holes in the big league roster? And how much of it is also to have ammunition to kind of make the moves to bring in big leaguers as needed?
Yeah, I think it's both. I mean, I think they have players who have upper level experience and can step in. But nobody who would preclude a big acquisition, certainly. You know, I think you can, and you could also package a number of prospects to acquire major league talent, you know, as needed. Now, their top, you know, top contributors this year are likely to be Luis Angel Acuña, Brandon Sproat, probably, and Ronnie Mauricio, if he's healthy.
And that's a group of guys who are not, none of them are going to be asked to be the cornerstone this year. More complementary pieces, which is a good way to work young guys and rookies into a lineup.
For sure. And I think they have just enough rotation depth that they can probably ease in some of the pitchers into, you know, spot starts and bullpen roles to kind of get their feet wet.
So when you look at this, though, like you said, this is more of a depth than a top end. There's not a top 25 prospect on our top 100 in the Mets organization right now. But the other thing that kind of stands out with this as I kind of look at it is also an organization. Jet Williams is our number one prospect for the Mets. But I feel like that there are a number of guys in this top 10 who, if you said 10 years from now, we looked at this and said, oh, this player ended up being the top producer out of this group. This player was the best player ended up out of this group. There are a lot of guys where I can probably try to make a case for that, which kind of speaks to that depth that you're talking about. Like, do you kind of feel like that this is an org that has a lot of guys who could end up being the best guy in a top 10, 15 on this Mets list?
Oh yeah, absolutely. In fact, I would not emphasize our prospect ranking in terms of ordinal numbers, but more so in tiers. I think you can make a case. You can make a case for Jet Williams, Brandon Sproat. I think you can make a case for Jesus Baez, the up and coming shortstop third baseman. Some people might like Ronnie Mauricio for the power upside. It's just there's a lot of unknown right now because he had knee surgery in December 2023, and we still haven't seen him in a game situation yet. You know, those guys would be at the top. But yeah, I think, you know, I think you could go down even further than that, though, and say, yeah, I think
it could be Carson Bench. It could be Drew Gilbert. Yeah. You know, less likely. But if you told me that Drew Gilbert, you know, everything clicks for him, the tools are there for him to maybe be the best of this group.
Yeah, it's possible.
Unlikely, maybe in that case, but still possible. He was great at Tennessee, you know. Yeah. But okay, so with Jet Williams, what did lead him though to being number one out of that group of this group who were all in that similar tier?
Yeah, youth up the middle profile, and like the deciding factor might have simply been position player, less likely to have a injury interrupt an entire season, though ironically his last season
had an injury interrupt an injury.
Yes. But yeah, you know, you could find people who would advocate for Sproat, and you could find those who would advocate for Williams. So it was just kind of playing the percentages.
They're not that far apart, by the way, in our top 100 either. It's worth noting that, you know, that this is kind of in that group. Okay, with Jet Williams, he's obviously if you're picking a basketball team, you probably would not pick him very, very high because he is, but if you're picking for small strike zones, you would also pick Jet Williams very high. He's not particularly large in stature, but he's also not skinny. He's not going to get the bat knocked out of his hands, but the athleticism, the on-base skills, the hitting ability, that's kind of what makes him really kind of intriguing of where he might fit really even by, I would say, the end of 25, especially into 26.
It's possible. Yeah. I mean, you're really hoping for the top of the lineup spark plug outcome is what you're hoping for. Walks, doubles, singles, stolen bases. And hopefully he settles up the middle, most likely second base or center field. I don't think anybody, like even absent Lindor on the major league roster, I don't think anybody views him as a sure thing major league shortstop.
Am I also crazy to say, like, if you said, ask for a description of what this could look like, it's kind of like what the Mets saw, which was probably the best month of his career so far. It happened in the big leagues. But what the Mets saw last year at the very end of the year, regular season from Luis Angel Acuna, that's actually kind of what we're talking about here. If again, now Acuna did not produce like that before he came to the majors, but there are some similarities between those two, aren't there?
There are similarities, yeah. They're both shorter stature, middle infield background players who whose versatility and breadth of tools will be their ticket to major league playing time. Yeah.
But if you're now comparing that, let's say on the position player side, and you wanted to make the case for Jesus Baez, Jesus Baez is significantly further away. But if it all clicks, the impact from him could be bigger than Jet, isn't it?
I think so. I think, you know, some scouts outside the organization are bullish on his hitting potential. And I know the Mets internally really like his adaptability, coachability. He's open to playing different positions. He just wants to contribute. And he reached high A at age 19, but then tore his meniscus, so we didn't really get to see the full manifestation of what he could be. I think had he finished out a season, I think we'd be looking at him a little differently at this juncture.
That's the other thing that is a theme here. If you talk about Mets position player prospects, and you say, raise your hand if you were healthy at the end of the 2024 season, the number one prospect, Jet Williams, wrist injury, missed half the year. You said, you know, meniscus with Baez. And then Ronnie Mauricio last year was essentially a completely lost year for him. He's essentially coming into this year trying to make up for lost time, having missed basically a full calendar year plus since he's last played. in his case, that really is the unknown, because I feel like in Mauricio's case, this is the prospect we've been talking about for a while. I feel like the need, you're probably on the YouTube channel watching some video of him from 2018 right now, because yeah. We have video of Ronnie Mauricio from 2018 and it's 2025. That's how long he's been kind of part of this discussion. But the thing that does stand out to me is for all his, like, and I remember talking to scouts about him in 21, 22. And I was like, this guy, the range of outcomes for him was so massive, because you've got big tools. You've got the chance to be a player who stays in the dirt with big time power. But then you also have the risk that the aggressiveness, the over aggressiveness at times at the plate could really derail that. We still don't know yet on that, right? Like, I mean, he's made strides, but it's not just a question of seeing if he's fully recovered from a rather significant injury. It's more than that that is remains on the, okay, why are there reasons to still be a little cautious with Ronnie Mauricio?
Oh, yeah, for sure. His chase rate in his major league debut was very poor. Though when he did make contact, he hit the hardest ball and he met hit that season. And like you say, he's got the type of home run that best case is probably in the 30 home run range. You know, absolute, everything works out right. But yeah, his hitting approach, you don't often, what he's shown so far in the major leagues, you don't often see like superstars have that kind of hitting approach. So he'll have to rein that in or get extremely fortunate on his batted balls.
I know there's talk like, okay, he'll be in the competition at third base. I would still say, like, I know that Brett, as we record this, Pete Alonso is not a Met. I would say if that's the case, then we kind of look at Mauricio's part of that mix, but we got Mark Vientos, the just graduated prospects, Vientos and Beatty, Brett Beatty, kind of as the corners, you know, and battling for those corner spots. Who, by the way, the crazy part about it is are only a year younger than Juan Soto, which just tells right. you how amazing Juan Soto is. Does this feel like that they have internal answers at those positions? Like, do you feel like looking at it, that's like the, you know, that those three are enough to say if Alonso does not return, the, you know, that they can kind of handle those corner infield spots?
I wouldn't say that the answer would be unconditionally yes. I think Acuña's in the third base mix as well. I think what you do have are some options there. And then if it doesn't work at the trade deadline, you have the budget room and the trade chips to fix the situation, I would say. But Vientos has the power. I think it's just a question of, you know, his strikeout rate and approach as well, you know, seeing how that manifests. You know, maybe he's a JD Martinez type of hitter and it won't be an issue, but, you know, maybe he falls short of that.
It will be interesting to see. But again, so on the position player side, this is an organization that I would say that the depth of position player prospects, we haven't even gotten to, like, again, the further away, but not that much further away. You've got guys like Carson Bedge. You've got Brian Clifford. You've got Drew Gilbert. Those are still top 10 prospects. Are those players that, again, could – they're in that next tier right now, but they're a tier below more so because they're a little further away, a little less proven than it is that they're just in a different tier tool-wise, potential impact-wise? Or am I misreading that a little bit?
Yeah, I think Clifford does have – a potential carrying tool. I think his power would make him stand out. You know, Gilbert might be a little more risky in terms of having more of a tweener profile, like not good enough to play center defensively and not a good enough hitter for a corner everyday play. But yeah, Clifford might have a shot. He would also be in the first base mix down the road potentially, you know, if he pans out. Nick Morabito. Bench, yeah, we haven't seen a ton from Bench yet. You know, he played a month in pro ball and did not pull a ball in the air, though he did hit a couple of impressive opposite field home runs. So we'll see. A lot of people like his athleticism, and some are a little more skeptical of his pro potential. But
and we'll you see. Mentioned Morabito,
yeah, he'll be a double A this year. He has carrying tools. He's a defender and he runs and he's showing pretty good knack for contact after making huge strides with his contact ability last season. So he's somebody who might come up in a supporting role to start with a chance to be a regular in the future.
The thing that stands out to me about, and this makes a whole lot of sense for what the Mets should be trying to do here. Most of their prospects, I would say, like, tend to lean towards up the middle profiles more so than, you know, we just talked about, it's funny, we just talked about Vientos and Beatty and first base and, you know, third base and all that. But the majority of their prospects are shortstops, second basemen, center fielders. There are some catchers further down on the top 30, but there's a lot less. There's much fewer now of the, this guy's a left field, right field, first base profile. There aren't many of those guys, I feel like, who are prominent prospects in this organization right now. We don't know where Jet Williams is going to play long term, or Acuna, or Mauricio, or Baez. We could talk about the outfielders who really do kind of all at least start out as center fielders. For a team that, again, that's going to be trying to bring in impact players both in trades and free agency, they have a lot of players who could fit in a lot of different ways, I feel like, position player wise, because, you know, these are players who, if you can play short at a semi plausible level, you probably can handle second, you probably can handle third. They have a lot of those guys, I feel like, now. Yeah. They did used to.
That's true. It does seem to be a focus in the past few drafts. You know, we'll go over slot a little later to sign a Trey Snyder or a Boston Barrow or an AJ Ewing, just guys like that who really help deepen the system. I think the 2023 trade deadline also helped quite a bit when they got Gilbert and Clifford and guys like Marco Vargas and Jeremy Rodriguez. All of those players have really helped fill out the middle diamond.
Which, by the way, I will give them some credit on that. They did one of those very quick sells, you know, like you don't see all that often, where you have a team that the year before had been really had a great regular season, although I know some Mets fans may not be thrilled about how the way it ended. But again, a very good regular season. Took a step back, did a quick sell off, got out from under some veteran contracts, brought in some talent. And then said, okay, we're back. You know, it wasn't something where they said, oh, okay, now this is the start of a multi-year rebuild or anything. But it did add some depth to it. I think the Rays tried to do that in 2024, I would say, you know, like the Mets did in 23. Yeah. But that leads to us, there's also more pitching depth here, I feel like, than there was before. And we'll get into that right after this quick break.
It seems like everyone is either starting a side hustle or becoming their own boss. And you know what they're hearing a lot? It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/sell23, all lowercase. Whether you're selling loafers or peace lilies, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person. Covering all sales channels, from a shop front POS system to its all-in-one e-commerce platform, Shopify even gets you selling across social media marketplaces. With their 24/7 help and extensive business calls library, Shopify is ready to support your success every step of the way. Go to shopify.co.uk/sell23 to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.co.uk/sell23.
And we're back. So Matt, but when we talked about that Jet Williams is the number one prospect in the Mets organization, as you said, Brandon Sproat was right in that discussion as well. I'm going to add a little caveat also to say, to ask the question of, would a healthy Christian Scott, he would have graduated, but in some weird world where a healthy Christian Scott was still eligible, would he have been in that same discussion?
That's a great question. Knowing what I know now, I don't think so, just because we saw some of the limitations of his repertoire, especially against left-handed hitters in the major leagues. He's also going to be 26 this season, I believe. So I don't think he would have been quite this high. And in fact, I mean, you could argue him out of the top 10 for those reasons.
And by the way, we have to add in the caveat. The reason he ranks where he does on the list is he is injured. As you said, he'll turn 26 during the season. And he's missing time again. So they're, you know, missing time with a significant injury. So there's a reason for them. I'm throwing a hypothetical out there that's not the reality. So now I'll kind of flip it to, so why is Sproat the top pitching prospect in the Mets organization now?
His stuff. You know, he's got a loud fastball, a swing and miss changeup. He's taken to a sweeper, and he's, you know, cleaned up some of his mechanics. So there's pretty strong rotation potential, which I don't think was a guarantee when he was drafted. You know, you don't uniformly find that rival organizations view him like as a surefire impact starter. You know, but he's somewhere on the spectrum of, you know, late rotation, potentially dominant reliever. It's not 100% certain right now.
With that, like you said, the Mets do seem positioned, even if they don't make any more moves in the offseason, he will come into the year ticketed, I would think, for AAA, and then kind of at some point there may need a few starts or whatever, but it doesn't look like that they're, barring injury, and there will be injuries, they're pitchers, but barring injury, they're not in a situation when you look at, you know, with Senga back, you look at Manaya's back, you know, Frankie Montas, David Peterson. This is not a team that's going to be saying like, oh, they need to rely on Brandon Sproat, which actually might be a good position for him to make an impact as a rookie, because, you know, when you have guys who are on that reliever starter borderline saying, hey, we want to get a, you know, could you give us a really good 12, 15, 18 outs? Is a great way to kind of break those guys in a lot of times, I feel like.
And this is important, like in the context of David Stearns run organizations, this is how Corbin Burnes broke in, Brandon Woodruff. I'm not saying Sproat's as good as those guys, but I'm just pointing out that, you know, there is a path where that can lead to major success. And I think, you know, with Sproat, you probably want to see how he does at the first half at AAA, because he really scuffled when he reached that level last year. Granted, it was third level, and it's been his full debut, but he did struggle there.
As we kind of studied that, like, how much do you think that of that was the unusual environment that was AAA baseball, especially before they went to the full challenge system?
Yeah, I mean, it's a new ball. It's a new strike zone. But I think the concern is that the AAA batters were not as bothered by his fastball. I think that's where the concern comes in. It's a little not ideal shape, as they say. So I think that's what you want to see, is get into more advantageous accounts to use the secondary stuff.
How much of that would also kind of rely on, again, maybe his fastball is a half grade, a grade lower than what we, you know, kind of thought or hoped it would be. The changeup's really good too, right? Like how much of it is that his other stuff could be enough to still make him a very solid starter. The changeup gives him, he's not helpless. You know, again, if a lefty steps in the box, obviously because of that, but the slider and curve also, he has enough of an assortment that he doesn't have to be a fastball dominant pitcher, I would think, for everything to work.
Yep, that's accurate. I think he just has to, you know, show the fastball, establish it, and then go to his secondary stuff to get outs, yeah.
And when we say show the fastball, one thing about showing a fastball, if you show a fastball that's 98, that's 99, it's a little different than showing a fastball that's 92, 93, 94. And Sproat can do that, right?
Yeah, I think he topped that at 99 this year.
I mean,
I have to verify that, but it's somewhere in that range.
He's done triple digits before.
I think so, yes.
I mean, but so, okay, he's the top guy here. But the other thing that does stand out is there's some other names behind him as well. Now, obviously, we mentioned Scott. They're at, you know, at two-way player slash now right-hander, Nolan McLean. Is he also kind of had a not put himself on the map. He was already on the map before last year, but took another step forward on that map. How about last year? What did they see? What did you hear about him and his 2024?
Yeah, it's all about the slider with McLean. You know, he's got an athletic delivery and good fastball velocity and a great slider. I think that's what you're trying to do. I think, you know, we'll probably get him throwing more fastball variants, you know, two seam, maybe cutter as he gets closer. But at the heart of it, it's an excellent slider.
So the other thing that people might be surprised here is Jonah Tong is not in the top 10. We've talked about Jonah Tong a good bit. He had a very good season, especially a great first half of the 2024 season. What kept him out of the top 10? What are their kind of the remaining to-do list, or what are the concerns? It's like, okay, he's not far off. He's just off the top 10. But what is it that kind of keeps him in that next tier of prospects for the Mets.
I think one element of it is just the depth in the system. It's going to push some of the less experienced players down. That's one factor. I think there's, you know, he has the best fastball in the system, but it, you know, he doesn't have incredible velocity or incredible durability to hold the velocity deep into starts. And I think there's a lot of concern that the curveball has big break, but it's something that more advanced hitters will pick up out of the hand easier. So I think there's just some skepticism that it comes down to just more like a one pitch attack. And like, as you go deeper into lineups against more advanced hitters, it's not going to play as effectively. Though he does have major league upside. It's not to sell him as like a org player.
So if you're a Mets fan and you're watching and paying attention to Tong's 2025, if you said, okay, this is almost like MLB The Show, you can add one attribute for Jonah Tong this year. It's not going to be, you know, we're already going to say that the fastball, let's just, you know, let's say that the fastball, as he matures, he's still young, you know, relatively young. As he matures, he holds on to the fastball velocity a little longer in games. But is there, he has added a slider, he's added a changeup. Is one of those the key to kind of maybe unlocking another level, or is it improving the curve? Or what do you think kind of would do more to kind of help Tong take another step forward?
Yeah, I think, yeah, having that, reliable third pitch would go a long way. I think, you know, his fastball so strong, I don't want to say you have to add other fastball variants, but I think the third pitch, strengthening that, whether the slider, whether it's a splitter, perhaps, I don't know that he's really geared to throw the changeup for that arm slot.
So the other thing, and you mentioned it already, that does really jump out here, and Tom could even fit into this category, but the back half of this top 30, there's a number of guys where you're like, okay, the Mets could have some bullpen help down the road, which, again, there are a number of guys. Some of these guys we talk about at the top, Brandon Sproat could be bullpen help, you know, down the road. We don't know how it's all going to work out. But does that where the Blade Tidwells of the world kind of probably fit into this in the long term?
Yeah, I could see Tidwell adapting to a bullpen role pretty quickly. You know, he's... A lot of the Mets pitchers struggle at AAA. Like, I don't know what it is exactly, like with between the ABS and the different ball, they just don't get the same results or the quality of hitters, I suppose. But yeah, Tidwell is definitely somebody with his big velocity and a big slider, somebody who could fit in a bullpen role for sure.
I did want to bring him back to position players for a minute, one last time, because Luis Angel Acuña, we talked about it earlier, but he had a 2024 minor league season that could only, I think, be described as disappointing. Obviously, it was picked up from the Rangers a couple of years ago, and there are some real, you know, skills and tools here. But so, like, if the season had ended on, I want to say, August 31st, and you said, where is Luis Angel Acuña? I think we would have said, yeah, he's really looking to bounce back after a pretty rough year, sub 300 OBP at AAA, didn't really show a ton of power, you know, hit to just under 260. But then he gets the September call-up, and he produces, you know, it ends up being a spark plug for the big league club down the stretch, and starting at shortstop for them also in the final, like, two and a half weeks of the season. How much... you know, how much do you balance what we saw over the entirety of the minor league season versus what he did at a higher level, at a tougher level at the end of the year?
Yeah, that is the mystery. Later in the AAA season, I think the Mets had him focus on taking his A swing more often, and kind of leaning in. They found that that did not sacrifice any of his zone contact ability, which remains strong. That carried over to the big leagues. He made a ton of contact on pitches in the zone. And he got really good results. I mean, I would caution that he was doing that batting ninth and kind of ambushing some weaker major league relievers at a lot of those home runs. But I think there is a path here where he is effective because he does defend, he does run, he does throw, he does make contact. I mean, he brings a lot of aspects to a team and as a contributing player.
I think he could be really, like, in that role, I think his kind of ideal role is, I mean, it's kind of the opposite of, you know, his brother, his older brother, you just say Ronald Acuna's like, just, you're going to play right field. Just keep your knees healthy. In Luis Angel Acuna's case, I could see a situation where he starts 15 games at like three, four different spots, comes off the bench in other games and all, where you're like, okay, he's not really a starter anywhere, but you know, I think we can overrate the super sub, but I also think there have been studies that show like having guys who have that kind of positional versatility who are plausible big leaguers is incredibly valuable, because let's say like, if you're the Mets and let's say that Jose, you know, Siri goes down, which isn't a crazy thought that he might miss some time. If he did, and you have a plausible center fielder to step in, or you say, okay, perish the thought, but Francisco Lindor is going to miss 3 weeks. Okay, if you have a plausible 3 week shortstop or a 3 week second baseman for Jeff McNeil or whatever it is, having a guy who can check off all of those boxes and provide value off the bench is something that a lot of teams, I feel like, don't have, you know, a lot of the times. This is that, yeah, that depth that makes, we've talked about this on a lot of, I've been recording a lot of these deep dives, but if you go from having a 4 WAR player and that person goes down and you replace them with 2 WAR player, okay. 1.5 WAR player, okay. If you go from that 4 WAR player to replacement level, you really feel a much, or a negative, you know, like a guy who's really shouldn't be on the, you know, on the field. That hurt, that really does do you some damage. Acuna provides a lot of a lot of backup plans, I feel like, for them.
Well, I agree. And he was not, you know, cowed by the situation being called to the major leagues under such emergency circumstances. He adapted very well. They carried him on all the postseason rosters. I agree with you. I think he's a valuable semi-regular multiple positions.
And you said like, this even, he even could fit into that third base situation, mm-hmm, because the other thing I'll say about that is his range of variance is probably less than some of the other players we are talking about here. Because if you talk about Brett Beatty, if Brett Beatty's not hitting and he's going through a cold streak, you know, there's not a lot else he's bringing on the field. Whereas Luis Angel Acuna could be providing, okay, he got a walk, he stole second, he went, you know, first to home on a ball in the gap, he's playing good defense. There's a lot of different little subtle ways that he can help a team. Again, it'll be interesting to see, because at the same time, we don't want to go overboard on it. We've always kind of thought there's some talent here, but I don't want to go overboard for a guy who really was a below average performer at AAA for much of the year, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. He completely rewrote his season in the course of 3 weeks.
It is pretty amazing. But, well, before we run, I do want to also throw out one other question, which is, okay, so looking past the top 10, who's someone who's a little bit less known, a little bit less highly regarded right now, who's a player to keep an eye on for the future?
I can only pick one.
You can do two. Mark Chiarelli's been doing two.
I kind of like Nick Morabito. I was wrong about him because he did not show as well in 2023. He was a little older for a high school guy, 2022 draft. But he really emerged last season. I think he's got some major league tools. You know, I'm not sure exactly how much he's going to hit, but I think he does have some major league tools. And another player who was relatively new to me later in the season is Christopher Suero, a Dominican catcher who reached AA this year. He's got an interesting blend of tools. There's like a rough outline of like an Andy Rodriguez type of player, like your athletic catcher who can play other positions and hit for a little power and just do some different things for you.
I was going to say, you're referencing him to a former Met prospect himself, yeah, in Indy, you know?
Yep.
And Suero's also one of those, like, he's also coming home, right? Like, I know he signed out of the Dominican, but he's also from the Bronx.
Yep, he did. He played high school ball in the Bronx, exactly. Then he went internationally to sign, and now he's at AA.
So again, we're talking about a catcher who, you know, who has some athleticism as well. That's a good name to kind of file away and remember, because, you know, again, he plays AA this year.
He plays left field and first base as well. So, yeah.
you know. So, yeah. So that's our look at the Mets system. If you enjoyed this, there's a lot more at baseballamerica.com. We have full scouting reports, tools grades, BA grades for all 30 Mets prospects. And by the way, we're also expanding that. So, you know, we're going to have top 40 up on the site very quickly. We also have farm system, org system rankings to know how the Mets and how all the teams compare to each other as far as our view of their organization, talent, and depth. In addition to that, we have a new draft top 200 prospects for the MLB draft for 2025. So if you want to get your work done early, start prepping for what you are looking for your team for the draft, college top 25, college All-American team, high school All-American team. We're getting you ready for all the 2025 seasons over at baseballamerica.com. Please go. If you subscribe already, thank you. That's what allows us to do this, and we appreciate it. And by the way, if you're here on YouTube or you're on the podcast feed, leave a review if you're on the podcast feed. We appreciate it. And if you're on YouTube, please subscribe. Please like, you know, comment, you know, let us know. I try to be in the comments and kind of respond to as many as I can. So we like to have a conversation about this. You know, if you have questions, we try to answer them. We have discussions on the YouTube channel as well. For Matt, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
It seems like everyone is either starting a side hustle or becoming their own boss. And you know what they're hearing a lot? It's the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/sell23, all lowercase. Whether you're selling loafers or peace lilies, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person. Covering all sales channels, from a shop front POS system to its all-in-one e-commerce platform, Shopify even gets you selling across social media marketplaces. With their 24/7 help and extensive business calls library, Shopify is ready to support your success every step of the way. Go to shopify.co.uk/sell23 to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.co.uk/sell23.